Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Let me tell you a story, something that happened in our family a few years ago. About 4 or 5 years ago now, we lost my father-in-law. And he was a good man, and he deserved a good send-off. Now, keep in mind, these are the dynamics of my in-laws. I have three siblings-in-law and a wife. None of them today is a practicing Catholic, but my father-in-law was a very serious practicing Catholic. So obviously, we needed a Catholic funeral. Now, his wife, my mother-in-law, died a few years earlier, and the kids were not happy at all with the funeral mass that was celebrated in her honor. Just not. And so they turned to me and they said, "Fred, we need somebody good." And I said, "I think I can get you somebody." So I contacted my friend, Father Joachim Lally, and he did the mass. And he did it in a way that satisfied my in-laws and my wife beyond expectation, but of course, he also satisfied the traditional Catholics who attended the Mass as well. I was a hero. I wore that badge proudly. Father Joachim Lally has been a friend for several years, and I've always thought about having him on our program. And it occurred to me that he really is quite the local expert on Catholic mysticism. One of the things that spurred this conversation is that in May, he's going to be giving a retreat at the Shivananda Ashram in the Bahamas. And I thought that this would be an opportune time to share about this. And if anybody is interested in a meditation retreat in fantastic and lovely, gorgeous surroundings, this might be an opportunity. So we're going to talk about that as well. Let me tell you a bit about Father Lally. His work in the church goes back to at least 1958, when he was a Benedictine monk in Arkansas. He became a Paulist priest. He is the founder director of Catholic Youth in Action. He is the founder and executive director of the Adelante Youth Center and Adelante School Success in Lawrence, Massachusetts. He's a co-founder of the Dominican Youth Mission, and he has led over 40 missions involving evangelization, construction, and medical in the Dominican Republic. He's been doing this since 1990. He is currently a presenter at the Paulist Catholic Information Center here in Grand Rapids, and he is a certified presenter of Centering Prayer, parish missions, retreats, workshops, volunteer, and clothing center. He also works in prison ministry and is a board member and also on the development committee of the San Juan Diego Academy here in Wyoming, Michigan. So we welcome to Common Threads, Father Joachim Lally. Hello.
Hello, Fred. It's good to be here.
Thank you. First of all, let me talk about your name. You were not born Joachim, am I correct?
That's right. I was born Edward Charles Lally Jr. after my father. But as I was growing up in Arkansas and Tennessee, they usually give names that are nicknames. And so somehow or another, I ended up with the name nickname Buddy. But somehow the monastery did not want to call me Buddy. So we were asked to give the abbot, the superior, three names that he could choose from when we made our first profession of vows, and that was in 1959. And I gave him Joachim, Xavier, and Timothy, and he gave me my first choice, Joachim. And Joachim, in tradition, is the father of Mary, the grandfather of Jesus. Very few people know that. A lot of people know that Anne was traditionally the mother of Mary, but very few know that Joachim was the father of Mary, and also the only grandparent father that Jesus had, because most people have two sets of grandparents.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Gotcha. So now that's interesting, because I know that, I just mentioned that you have quite an active work in the Dominican Republic. Uh-huh. And I was curious as why you did not use a Spanish pronunciation. Do you use a Spanish pronunciation? Do they call you Joaquin down
when
there?
When I'm down there, yes. When working with Hispanics, it's Joaquin.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And I've always wondered that because I thought that perhaps you adopted a Spanish name because you work with a Spanish-speaking population so much, but that has nothing to do with it.
No, it just happened that it's a very common name used in Latin American countries. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's a name used all over the world, except the United States. And in France, Italy, German, they all have their versions of Joachim.
Okay. So. Okay, very good. So you started out as a Benedictine monk before you became a priest.
I did.
When you were a monk, were you heading towards the priesthood, or could that have been an end in itself?
In those days, you entered a separate novitiate, the first year, they call it, either to be a priest or to be a lay brother. And I ended up joining the seminary part to be ordained a priest, which I was in 1965. So 2 years ago was my 50th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so that time in the Benedictine monastery, that was a time of both contemplation and study.
Exactly, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. And you've had a very rich, diverse, and colorful career as a priest. Right now, you seem to divide your interest. I don't mean to be simplistic about this, but it does seem to be divided between a very deep contemplative experience as well as one of great action. Right. I speak specifically of what I know of you as a friend. I know that mm-hmm. your work in the Dominican Republic is quite significant. Reading over your bio, I see that you have even more activities to keep you up and running.
Yes, right, yeah.
But I'm curious. Do some people only see one side of you, or do you think most people who know you from the mission work, or know you from your teaching centering prayer? Do you like to make sure that you're always presenting a broader picture of who you are?
Yes, because when I was in the monastery, the focus was on silence and being in the enclosure of the monastery, not leaving. And I wanted to do both, contemplation and action. And I figured that I needed to leave the monastery and get permission from Rome to join the Paulist Fathers, which I made my first profession with the Paulist Fathers in 1975. And so I could do both. I could be contemplative in the world, as we call it. Combining, because I think the two are so much necessary for each other.
Certainly. It's interesting. I speak to a lot of Catholics, and I've had Catholics on this show, who have, essentially complained that growing up, the contemplative experience was never offered to them. They grew up, yes, they learned how to say the rosary. They grew up, yes, they knew how to go to Mass. But no one even indicated that there was a contemplative tradition in the church. Now, clearly, you can open up one of hundreds of books and find out that, of course, there is a tradition. But hasn't the church kept contemplation up until recently? Kept it away like the crazy uncle in the attic?
Well, I always call contemplation the best-kept secret of the Catholic Church. It was, since the early days of the Church, part and parcel of one of the two kinds of prayer that we have. There are two kinds of prayer, with words and without words. In the Greek, it's apophatic, which is the negative way without words. And then the Greek word for with words is cataphatic, with words. So we have focused on, for many years, both, except when the time of the Protestant Reformation came and Martin Luther, the Catholic Church mainly became focused on apologetics, defending the faith through scripture and tradition. And they sort of let the contemplation part be on the back burner. And so this was so for almost 500 years. And the one that kind of changed all that, and especially in the United States, was Thomas Merton in the Gethsemane Abbey in Kentucky and the Trappist Monastery. And from that, there arose other Trappists who took up the ball, and St. Joseph's Abbey in Spencer, Massachusetts, and they developed what we now call as centering prayer. And it's a method of contemplation that goes back to the teachings of Merton and also the book about silent prayer. What's the name of it now? I can't think of it. It's the famous, it's an anonymous author.
Oh, The Cloud of Unknowing.
Cloud of Unknowing. Thank you. I had a senior moment there, you know. Cloud of Unknowing, yes. Okay.
That's where your head was at the moment.
Exactly, yes. Unknowing. That's right. So anyway, that's kind of the brief history. And I learned the centering prayer practice from the founders in St. Joseph's Abbey in Spencer, Massachusetts in 1977, just a few years after they developed it. They developed it around 72, 73. And I came in 77 when I was living in Boston and have been practicing it and teaching it ever since.
And from what I understand, tell me if I'm wrong, that so many of the mystics in the Catholic Church, those people who really dedicated their lives to the inner search, the experience of inner communion, they were not always treated well by their higher ups. I mentioned the crazy uncle in the attic metaphor, that they were treated like the kooky people. After they die, they can get canonized. But during their lives, they run into some opposition. Can you give us a few? Yeah, I see you nodding your head, so I'm not totally off track.
No, I know exactly where you're coming from. The fact is that there is this tension between outer and inner authority. Outer authority mainly being hierarchy and tradition and scripture and so forth. And the inner authority is that inner authority that one receives directly from one's personal experience with God. And this is like the song Blowing in the Wind. You don't control the wind very well. It's not controllable. And so there's been this tension between the people in authority being suspicious of that which is not directly under their control. This is the human dimension of the church, okay? The Catholic Church. And any church, really. So it's been this struggle. There've been a lot of times when these kind of teachings were considered heretical and far out and so forth. And then later on, it became known that they were not that way, but they suffered in their lifetime during that. I mean, another example, of course, is Teilhard de Chardin. Now, he was not allowed to teach and write and everything else. And then now he's one of the most well-respected teleological teachers in the church. So,
if you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and Father Joachim Lally is my guest today. We're talking about mysticism and the contemplative tradition in the Catholic Church. So let's talk about a few examples that are usually, if I use the word trotted out, I'll tell you why. I remember having conversations with people about contemplation, meditation in the church, and on several occasions, they'll raise their hand, they'll say, "Oh, but we have Teresa of Avila, we have Meister Eckhart, we have Joseph of Cupertino, we have all these, but they always speak in the past tense as opposed to we have the ability to follow in their footsteps today. Now, of course, I understand that, yes, the church does offer that today. But so many people I've seen, and this can happen in any tradition, instead of taking matters into your own hands, you look to other people in history. You put them on a pedestal, like they have done this. Right. God knows I can't. Right.
Right.
So let's talk about those people and just give a brief biography of a few of the real heroes, if you will, of that part of the church. Meister Eckhart, let's pull one out of the air.
All right.
Let's talk about him.
One of my favorites. Okay. All right. I've been teaching the mystics for a couple of years now and had several classes on the teachings of Meister Eckhart. Belonged to the Order of Preachers, the Dominicans, and he and Thomas Aquinas had the distinction of being the only two who were twice head of the University of Paris, and very distinguished scholars at the time, and right around the time of the kind of dispute between the Dominicans and the Franciscans, and he was so deep that I think basically he could not be grasped and understood by a lot of the people in authority. And so they were very suspicious. They called him before the Inquisition, and he had to appear before the Pope, Pope John the 21st or something like that. I forgot when it was. And he died before a final pronouncement was made on whether or not his works were heretical or not, just a few months before that. And so it came out that they did not declare him a heretic, but they said that some of his teachings were suspicious and that we could not believe them, okay? And not too long ago, a number of Dominican preachers, the Order of St. Dominic, they got together and studied for 10 years all of his teachings to see whether there was some heresy there or not. They came out and said nothing whatsoever. These were scholars and theologians. So I think basically he is so deep. He's the deepest person I think I've ever tried to read that, you're suspicious because you don't understand it. But most theologians, most mystic theologians, will say understanding is highly overrated in the spiritual life. And
bypassing the rational mind?
Exactly. Well, going beyond it, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not stopping there. Meister Eckhart wrote a beautiful treatise called How to Live Without a Why. And so this is something that, wow, we want to know why for everything, because the why is the control tower. That's our ego, that we want to be on top, we want to be in control, and as soon as we understand everything. And that's why I think a lot of people don't go into an intimate relationship with God, because they don't understand, and they want to figure out God. And then they're, at that point, they're in competition with God. And so it's all about letting go. You could sum up all of contemplation with those two words, let go.
I'm curious, because I knew that there was a tension in Meister Eckhart's life, and I knew that he was suspected of being a heretic. I wasn't aware of the proximity of his death and the final conclusion, at least the conclusion back then.
Right.
And I'm curious if there is any movement for canonization of him.
I haven't heard of any. Some of the recent popes, though, have quoted him in some of their
talks.
That's
always a good sign.
And that helps, Okay.
Have they quoted you yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, you have a shot with this
one. Well, I mean, sometimes the ones that most get quoted are the ones that are deceased. Okay.
Oh, I see. So we're not waiting for that.
That's right. No, not right now. Okay.
So. Okay, I understand. How about Julian of Norwich?
Julian of Norwich, the first woman to write in the what we know as the English language. Lived in Norwich, England, in around the 1300s. And very little is known. We don't even know her full name, because she, only reason we call her Julian of Norwich is because she was an anchoress who attached her little hut to the walls of the Church of St. Julian in Norwich, England. And therefore, she's called Julian of Norwich, but we don't know her real name. And an anchoress was someone who, a lay person, who would literally attach their little building abode next to a church so that they could have a window looking into the church. They could follow the Mass and so forth, but they would live as hermits. But they would also have another window where people from the outside could come for spiritual advice. So she was one of those who was well respected. And she wrote her writings, were not published until several hundred years after she died because of fear of the Inquisition.
Where were they kept? I mean,
they were just kept away and not shown and not talked about until it was considered safe.
Interesting. Now, it seems like if she had this relationship, meaning she had a hut that that was built so it butted up against a church.
Right.
She must have had a real relationship with the church.
Well, of course, yes. She was. She was not in a convent as such. She did not make vows like regular sisters and nuns would do. But she made a special ceremony of becoming an anchoress, which was a public ceremony. And it was well respected in those times. They had a number of them.
So you're saying that the church had no problem with people coming to her for spiritual advice?
There was some
legitimate authority that was granted her by the church.
Well, it was mainly her own personal knowledge and her personal holiness that attracted people to her.
Well, certainly. Yeah. But I'm just wondering what the church felt of her at that time.
Well, they
must have allowed it.
Allowed it because she lived to be about 80 years old, I think. And they never, put the clamps on or anything. So,
would you say there was anything unique about her? The way you talked about Meister Eckhart, trying to get rid of the why or going beyond ego. Is there anything when we think of Julian of Norwich that we'd say, this is what she added to the canon of mysticism, if you will?
Well, Julian, her writings are called The Showings, okay? And it's all about a vision that she had within about a 10-hour period of time when she was, I think, in her early 30s. And her whole rest of her life, 40, 50 years, was spent in writing about and telling people about these visions. And a lot of them were dealt with the issue of the physical sufferings of Christ, the agony in the garden, the scourging and so forth, and bloody and everything. It was kind of typical of those days. Okay, that was sort of the tradition then. But she had some unique offerings in terms of she referred to God often as mother, and she referred even to Jesus as mother. And of course, we have the famous quote of Jesus saying, "I would like to gather everyone under my wings like a mother hen to the chickens." So there is there's no gender in God, and so God is just as much woman as man. But for some reason, we have focused on God the Father. But the Catholic Church has not come out in any way saying that we could not refer to God as mother. A lot of people, I think, take offense at that. They don't understand it. They don't like it. But Pope John Paul I, who just was pope for about 2 or 3 months, wrote that God is more a mother than a father. This is in one of his writings. So There's some backup there.
I would imagine so. Father, we have just a couple of minutes left, and I want you to take these last couple of minutes to tell us about your retreat at the Shivananda Ashram in the Bahamas real quick.
Okay. Well, this is a retreat. I'm not still sure who gave them my name to invite me, but I'm grateful. But this is called a Yoga Vacation Program, and it's in the Paradise Island in the Bahamas from May the 5th to the 9th of this year. And there will be a number of different presentations. As far as I can see from the program, I will be the only one representing the Christian tradition. There will be Buddhists and Hindu and Sufi and medicine wheel. There'll be the Bodhisattva, what is it?
Bodhisattva.
Bodhisattva. See, I'm not familiar with that. Bodhisattva. All right.
That's Buddhist.
That's Buddhist. Okay. Bodhisattva. Okay.
Yeah. So
Rumi.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And so be a lot of focus on meditation, but from different spiritual traditions.
And from what I see, let's see. Do you have a website right in front of you?
Yeah. On for this?
Yeah.
Well, it's the... I looked up just in the Google Shivananda Ashram Yoga Retreat.
Okay, yes, that's it. Shivananda Ashram Yoga Retreat. If you Google that, you will.
Yes.
Also, I do see one here. Simply www.shivananda.org, and that's Shivananda.
Right.
So, okay, wonderful. And I'm sure that people can contact you here locally as well. We are out
I have a number you can call. It's 866-559-5167.
Great. Excellent. Okay. We are out of time, but I want you back next week. We'll talk more about the retreat, more about mysticism in the church. I want to thank Father Joachim Lally for being here on Common Threads. I'm Fred Stella. This is WGVU.